Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David. Good evening, and good evening to all our listeners. Tonight we have another newsworthy show, and I want to remind our audience that June is PTSD Awareness Month. It's Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Awareness Month. And so tonight, as well as the rest of the month, we will be focusing our show on PTSD and the effects of it on our veterans. With that in mind, tonight we welcome our guest, Rebecca Winkler, who is the co-founder of Winkler's Wish Foundation, and whose son, Drew, a veteran, died of suicide from PTSD after years of battling with the VA. His story is well documented on social media. However, before we introduce Rebecca to the show, I want to send it back to David for some important information. David?
Thank you, Richard. For those who are first-time listeners to our program, please know that this show is not only a news show, it is also a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions. So you can call us anytime during the show at this number. So grab your pen and paper. It's 1-888-627-6008. I'll repeat that. It's 1-888-627-6008. And I would like to recognize and thank the sponsors of tonight's show, the American Legion's John F. Murphy Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel actions. Back to you, Rick.
Great. And yes, we want to thank our sponsors for helping us keep our show alive and well. I want to also remind our listeners that Wednesday, June 14th, is Flag Day. It commemorates the adoption of the flag of the United States, which happened on June 14th, 1777, by resolution of the Second Continental Congress. This is also the date of the U.S. Army birthdays, as Congress adopted the American Continental Army on this day in 1775. So we encourage our listeners to celebrate Flag Day by displaying the red, white, and blue in front of homes and businesses. So, David, I know we have some information going on in D.C. What can you tell us?
Yes. Before we go to our special guest tonight, just some quick news from Washington. Congress is considering the VA's proposal in the budget for fiscal year 2018, which would cut individual unemployability, also known as IU benefits, for thousands of elderly veterans. Under current VA policy and rules, disabled veterans can receive a 100% rating, either based on what's called the rating schedule or based on the concept of individual unemployability, or IU. In that case, if they're rated 60 to 90% based on the schedule and if they're unable to work. Now, the proposed budget, if incorporated into final law, would stop VA payments of IU benefits as soon as the veteran reaches the age of 62, which coincidentally is the youngest age upon which a person can receive Social Security retirement. However, Social Security retirement is based on how much a person has earned during his or her time working and contributed to the system, and a person who has been unable to work has therefore paid less into the system and will receive less. We also know that the VA is notorious for issuing low disability ratings, so this proposal would be another reason why veterans will need to fight for a 100% rating based on the rating schedule rather than rely on the concept known as individual unemployability. We've talked about this in previous weeks. It's really an important issue for veterans to pay attention to and to contact their members of Congress. Another important piece of legislation we've talked about in previous shows, very important, Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. The numbers for those bills are S-1024 in the Senate an H.R. 2288 in the House. It's already passed in the House. It's pending action. It's awaiting action in the Senate. We believe this legislation will actually make the system worse for veterans. It removes the VA's duty to assist veterans after an initial denial of the claim. And it's obvious to us and some organizations like the Vietnam Veterans of America, we'll have a guest from that organization on in a couple weeks. It's obvious to us that this legislation makes things easier for the VA and doesn't really help veterans. So again, we urge listeners to contact their senators and their congressmen, pay attention to veterans' issues. You can do that websites like veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov, the websites for the two committees on veterans' issues. All right, Rick, that's it for a quick summary of the news. Why don't we move on for our guest tonight, Rebecca Winkler.
Thanks, David, and thanks for the analysis of Shelton's proposal to cut the IU benefits. I'm amazed, I continue to be amazed by the lack of sensitivity of the Secretary toward our vets on that particular issue. As I mentioned, June is PTSD Awareness Month. Last week, we had a singer-songwriter, Matt Williams, who told us how his craft of singing and songwriting has helped him cope with his PTSD incurred as a result of his combat experience in Afghanistan. Matt explained how the VA psychologist failed in treating him for PTSD and how they simply wanted to prescribe more and more medication. Matt explained how the meds made him feel even worse and at times psychotic. It was only after applying himself to songwriting and singing for veterans and veterans' functions was he able to cope with his disorder. The nightmares have not gone away. The fear of IEDs exploding around him even today has not gone away. However, Matt has been able to deal with his mental disorder. At this time, I would like to welcome our special guest, Rebecca Winkler, who herself is a veteran, having served in the Air Force, and she was medically discharged and has a service-connected disability. Rebecca has had her own personal fight with the VA. She is currently a Department of Defense DOD civil service employee with 9 years as a contract specialist negotiator buyer for the Armed Forces. She works at Eglin Air Force Base. Rebecca is a wife and mother of 3 boys and grandmother of 2 boys. Lots of boys there, Rebecca. She and her husband, Rick, a sheriff's officer in Okaloosa County, established the Winkler's Wish Foundation in honor of their son, Drew, who died Memorial Day 2016 after years of battling with PTSD and the VA. Tonight, in continuance of our focus on PTSD and the fact that it is PTSD Awareness Month, we welcome Rebecca Winkler to our show. Good evening, Rebecca. How are you?
Good evening. Well, it's Monday.
What's that?
It's a Monday, not exactly my favorite day.
It's a long day for us here at Corey and Hurley. As we do this show every Monday evening. First, Rebecca, let me offer my condolences for the tragic loss of your son, Drew. You know, I had an opportunity over the last couple of weeks to read up on your foundation and read Drew's story, and clearly a tragedy. Rebecca, can you tell us about Drew? You know, prior to entering the military, give us some sort of idea what kind of son he was during his high school years.
It actually started from before that. While we were stationed in England, he started playing football, flag, and then tackle, and just excelled at it. I mean, he actually loved it. As a family, we're diehard. Well, 4 out of the 5 of us were diehard Cincinnati Bengals fans, and he actually played football from elementary to high school. And his favorite position was a center, which was kind of ironic. Because from the age of 12 until he died, he was only 5'9", which is obviously not a typical size for a football center. But he was aggressively ruthless on the field to the point of some of the other team's coaches would come to his and say, will you please back him off? Just calm him down a little bit. He's literally sacking our quarterback every play. Please call him off. So that was his athletics as far as that. Anything to do with a computer, that kid was a whiz genius. He taught himself. He taught himself Photoshop so he could do a picture of himself in 3 different outfits and 3 different poses in front of his pickup truck. It literally came natural to him. So when we PCS'd here to Florida from Clovis, New Mexico, about halfway through his sophomore year, the guidance counselor called us in and said, your son would probably do well doing dual enrollment. And that's basically where they're afforded the opportunity to either do the collegiate high school, where they sit as part of a high school on a college campus, or actually dual enrolled, where they sit in class with other college students. And he did that for the last 2 years of his high school and actually graduated with his associate's degree before walking for his high school graduation. So he was pretty exceptional, I think, but I'm biased.
Now, Rebecca, in my introduction regarding you, you indicated to me earlier that you served in the Air Force. And did your husband, Rick, serve in the Air Force as well?
Yes. I was in just shortly under, a little bit under 4 years. I was medical boarded out during the 1990 drawdown when they were really letting and getting a lot of people out. My husband retired with over 20 years as security forces from Hurlburt Field here in Florida. So pretty much Drew's whole life, it was revolved around the military. It's what he grew up knowing.
Now, I was reading somewhere that Drew went off to college after high school and was doing pretty well, but apparently he had an interest in following in the family tradition of you and your husband, Rick. However, I guess you and Rick kept urging him to kind of stay in college. Is that
we did. We did. I actually sicked my mother, his grandmother, on him to get him to do one additional semester with her paying for it. And in that last semester, where he had done better before, it just wasn't something he wanted to do. So he really didn't care about the classes. But he did it because I wanted him to, his dad wanted him to, and my mother wanted him to. So after that, he came to us and he said, look, I want to go in the Air Force. I want to go in like you and dad did. He looked up to his dad because that's all he'd ever known his dad as, pretty much, was security forces in the Air Force, and he wanted to make him proud. Like I said, his whole life was the Air Force, with moves and schools and assignments. My husband was a little bit more adamant than I about him not going into the military, because with Rick being in for over 20 years, he'd seen so many things through the years of his military career that have changed. Benefits that were promised to he and I when we came in, and then through the course of years, they just went away. They were no longer what they were told to you when you came in. I mean, I wasn't thrilled about Drew going into the military, but I kind of approached it from a different aspect in that he was an adult, and I had to trust the decision that he chose to make and just made sure that I let him know that no matter what his decision was, I was going to love him always.
So he then enlisted, and I think you indicated initially he was sent to Italy.
Yes, it was his only base, actually, after tech school.
Okay. And what did he do there? What did he do in Italy?
He went into the Air Force in a computer career field, which required taking an additional test, and he passed. So they offered, it's the same kind of thing I did when I was in. A little bit different, though, is when he got to Aviano, they were in the process of making some changes to the career field, computer career field, and he was actually part of a small percentage of that computer career field that was actually converted into cybersecurity. So he ended up maintaining servers and doing things to help cybersecurity or detect leaks or weaknesses and things like that. And prior to his deployment, we actually have his personal information file, or PIF, where he won multiple awards for Airman of the Quarter, was nominated for Airman of the Year. It was stated in documents that although only an airman, he was their go-to guy for unit training, for on-the-job and server issues. He was requested and sent on a TDY, or temporary duty assignment, to Switzerland to actually assist a location there in setting up a new server and providing initial training and some kind of hints and helps on how to operate the server. After getting to Italy, he still maintained the social butterfly that he was here. He loved being in group settings and parties around people, but he also loved working one-on-one, training people and group training. He loved trying to help people find a smarter, not harder way to do things that benefited both them and the person or organization that they were doing those for.
Now, Rebecca, what year did Drew enter the service, and how old was he at the time?
He entered the service, I'm wanting to say, in 09, I believe, or 08. I'm trying to remember. He and I both graduated. He got his associate's degree in 07 in the same ceremony I got my bachelor's degree in 07, so it would have been 08. And he was 19. So he wasn't right out of high school, but he was 19 when he went in, so still
then,
young, I
think. After his service in Italy and in Switzerland, I think you indicated to me in one of our pre-interviews that he volunteered to deploy to Iraq. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the circumstances there?
He did. He actually had not been on station long enough to typically be able to go on a deployment. Most places there's a time on station requirement, but he volunteered to go to Iraq, not even actually as a career or a computer career field person, and he actually had to get a waiver for his time on station requirement to go. But he went, and also while in Iraq, he also volunteered for additional duties, being a third-party national escort, while he was in Iraq. So he volunteered for additional things, again, while he was in Iraq. Apparently, he had not learned the lesson that his dad had told him, is you never volunteer for anything.
Wow, yeah. You know, you told me that after his experiences in Iraq, you and Rick started to notice a change in Drew's demeanor. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's kind of the direction we're going with regard to the PTSD.
Right. When he came back in Iraq, we didn't have any one-on-one interface with him to, like, see him personally. But we knew that he was having problems sleeping. He had mentioned to me on several occasions that he'd actually started having problems sleeping while he was in Iraq. And had actually seen some medics there to try and get something to help him sleep. And that continued when he got back to Italy. It was too quiet. He tried fans. He tried everything. He said it was literally too quiet. He was so used to all of the noises and the commotions and the firefights that went on in Iraq that he literally couldn't cycle down to go to sleep. He was always hypervigilant. So he would tell me about those things and having night terrors and anxiety attacks. And towards the end, before he got out, it was really surprising to me when I look back on it that nobody thought it was strange that this stellar go-to airman that was put in for all these awards was coined by a general in one activity. Started spiraling so out of control, doing things that were actually out of character for him that he had never done before his deployment. And nobody thought to say, whoa. His first sergeant had asked a question, could this be related to PTSD? And they said, well, you know, we can't say for sure. We can't make a definitive answer, but we can't say it's not. But yet you know, nobody was just like, wow, this is a totally different person.
You said that he was doing some things that were unexplainable and out of character for Drew. If you wouldn't mind sharing just briefly maybe one or two incidents that you can think of, because, you know, for a lot of our listeners, they're not familiar with PTSD, and, you know, they hear about it. But, you know, if they don't have a family member that's suffering from it, has been exposed to it, they really, you know, it's four words of a disorder. What can you tell us that, give us an example?
Some of the things that he did when he got out that he had told me about after the fact is that when he came back, it was like he was always chasing the next rush, trying to keep the adrenaline up. So, I mean, he was literally jumping across buildings to get from one building to the other, driving, you know, down their highway at, you know, 150 miles an hour, drinking to excess, which we now know is a common factor for veterans that are trying to self-medicate through PTSD,
yes.
is they
yes,
just try and take pain meds, which he had been prescribed because he tore his hamstring, so they had put him on Percocet. So between that and excessive drinking, he started self-medicating, which then led to not making appointments. The anxiety and the panic attacks would cause him to be jumpy at work, hard to concentrate at work, easily angered, which was so unlike him, doing crazy things like, quite honestly, peeing off a dorm room balcony. You know, things that he would have never done. I mean, he grew up his whole life with his dad being in law enforcement. So these were things that he would not have normally done and had not done prior to deploying to Iraq. So it was literally like two different people. It's like they sent one Drew to Iraq and a totally different Drew came home.
Wow. Now, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when he was in the military, that they had diagnosed him with PTSD and social anxiety disorder.
Yes. He had started initially going to, he started through their primary care and got to talk to someone there and then started speaking to a counselor individual there, and then who diagnosed him with chronic PTSD and social anxiety disorder, and actually given him some medications to help him sleep and to help with anxiety. And then he was actually, one of the largest reports actually from mental health, he actually saw a psychiatrist who said that they concurred with the chronic PTSD and social anxiety disorder and also gave him medications to help. And even in the report, the psychiatrist made a statement that said he had discussed with Airman Winkler the possibility of a medical board for his PTSD, which could possibly afford him greater VA benefits. But in doing that, that would have required Drew to stay longer in Italy. And at that point, with everything that had happened, he just wanted to go home. So he said, nope, I'll take my claim up with the VA when I get out. Talk about hindsight 2020, I would have begged him to stay in Italy and go through the medical board, hoping that he would not have been denied twice by the VA for PTSD.
Yeah, but and notwithstanding, you know, the difficulty later on, clearly the government was on notice about Drew's condition.
Absolutely.
And then he was discharged, and he separated. And I think you indicated to me that he was given no exit physical and no final brief out with mental health, which, you know, I never served. David, my law partner, is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. So you guys would all know this better than I would. But it seems to me that it would almost be routine that a military guy or gal would get an exit physical.
Well, from the time that they issued him his discharge until he was put on the plane, it was basically less than a week, I believe. So he had no exit physical. He had no final outbrief with mental health. He was discharged with just the minimal amount of medications that he already had on his person for his PTSD, insomnia, panic attacks. Literally, not only did he not have all of this stuff, in doing all of these activities, his discharge was actually a discharge of honorable under other conditions for multiple minor infractions. That's literally what they put him out for. In correspondence that I had with his first sergeant, literally the statement was made to me is that Drew made the wrong people mad and they just wanted him gone. So not only did he not have an exit physical or a refill on meds, he was not given a copy of his medical records. He had to sign a medical records release, have me email it to the first sergeant for him to take to the hospital and then to email me his records in about 7 or 8 different emails. And to make matters even worse, he was not even given the opportunity to be there when they packed his stuff out of his dorm room. He was already in the States by the time they packed his stuff out.
So they just put him on the high road and said, get going, get out of here.
They literally had said that they were going to give him a referral EPR for this compounding of behavior. It was going to be within just days of his departure. So he wasn't even going to have the amount of time that a military member is supposed to be allowed to have for rebuttal, which I believe is three business days. So he, and we've never, you know, hid this, he used his computer admin rights, looked at his EPR on another computer, wrote his rebuttal to have it the next day when he was going to be presented with his referral EPR. And when they discovered what he did, which he didn't lie about, he told them what he did, they immediately started processing a discharge. And he was chaperoned from that point until he got on the plane.
Wow. Now, what year was this, Rebecca?
It was February of 2011.
Okay.
I think his last day in was the 21st or 22nd of February, somewhere that week.
So he served for about 3 years then?
He served, I'm wanting to say he went in and I don't know if he did quite 3 years because okay. I know his discharge was February of 11, and I know his time in Iraq was May of 09 to September of 09, so he would have come in June of 08. I believe so, just shy of the 3 years.
Now, I know you and I have talked extensively about, you know, once Drew got home, and, you know, the best way I can characterize it, simplest, is it went from bad to worse.
It did.
You know, I know you had, I've got my notes, that at one point he was having problems with the VA and they refused to let him have counseling closer to home. And as you indicated, he was only, and he was being overly medicated. And at this point, it's clear that the VA health benefits side was failing him. So tell me a little bit what was going on in his life at this point.
About roughly 3 weeks after he got back here, because he stayed with us for several months. About 3 weeks in, I started noticing a severe change in his behavior. He became more and more withdrawn. Anytime we went out in public, he had to be able to see the door. He was fearful of being in crowds. He was afraid if he couldn't see an exit path to get out. Loud noises, backfires on cars, fireworks would just literally put him in a full-blown panic attack of fear that something was going to happen to him or to his family. So I, after I saw him physically crash in my living room on my next day off, I took him to the VA center clinic and walked up and I said, I need my son seen. I had his mental health records, and we had not got his medical records, but thank goodness he had his mental health records with him, his file. And their initial response was, the nurse said, well, we're sorry, but we can't get him in to see today. It's going to probably be several weeks before we can fit him in. And I looked at the nurse and I said, well, I said, this is going to go one of two ways. I said, either you're going to see him today, or my next stop is going to be Congressman Miller's local office. Congressman Miller was in at that time. So they said, hold on, and probably maybe 15 minutes later, they said, okay, well, we're going to fit him in. And when you actually saw the psychiatrist, that person was surprised at the amount of medication, the dosages that he had been given while he was active duty, and actually changed some of the medications.
Hey, Rebecca, can you share with us some of the medication he had been prescribed?
I'm wanting to say when he came back from Italy, he was on Xanax. He was on the one that
was
Xenamine, I think, for sleep. And
I
think Zoloft for depression.
He was on Prozac as well?
Nope, Xanax. They had him on Xanax. Yeah. I think Zoloft, possibly, and then a medication to help him sleep. But they were kind of surprised at the VA, not just that he had all of those medications, but that the dosage were, I don't know what they were because I didn't go in with him for that appointment, but I just remember him coming out and saying, Mom, they're kind of surprised at the dosages of the three things. I think he was also on clozapam. If I get the names right, I apologize because I'm not the medical person in the family. So they kind of backed him off a lot of those and came up with some different things that they wanted to try. And then referred him to start counseling, which at that time I think the clinic may have had two counselors. he was going to be several weeks to get him in, so he got his first appointment. But he had a problem keeping the appointments because he was off every Monday and Tuesday. So they would give him an appointment 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out, and it would be on a Wednesday or Thursday. And he's like, can I please get an appointment on Monday and Tuesday? I'm off. My brother's off. He can bring me down here. And they're like, no, you're going to have to take this appointment. And then once it gets closer to the day of your appointment, you can call and let us know if you are or are not going to be able to make it and reschedule at that time, which, of course, would have been another 2 to 4 weeks. So he stopped going because it became such a fearful, stressful, panic-stricken process for him to get an appointment, call, reschedule. It'd be another day that he was working. And he had to drive 30 minutes for what would have been a 15 to 20-minute appointment. And driving was one of his triggers. He was extremely afraid of driving and stressed him. He had had an incident that he relayed to me after he got back that he had been driving down the road and a trash bag moved across the road in front of his truck. And he literally had to pull into a parking lot because of the fear and panic that he had for nearly 45 minutes before he could even calm down to continue driving. And that was driving in Crestview, his hometown city, and yet they wanted him to drive 30 minutes one way for a 15 to 20-minute counseling appointment to round drive all the way home.
Didn't you also, we were talking that at one time he was having a panic attack and his counselor said, well, take your Xanax, get in the car, come see me, and then when the appointment's over, you can take another Xanax and drive home.
It was actually the psychiatrist, the one who did med management, because the counselors really don't get a lot involved in medications unless they, like, put a note in the file for the psychiatrist to see it at the next, you know, follow-up med. But he had been told when he relayed, look, coming into the counselor is extremely hard for me. Can I please see a counselor in Crestview? You know, he says, I have to believe there are counselors in Crestview. He was told, well, if before getting ready to come down for your appointment, you're stressed, you're having a panic attack, just take a Xanax, come down to the appointment, and then if it's still too bad, take another Xanax and drive home. And he told me about it right after the appointment, and it just mind-boggled me that anyone would tell, you know, a 24-something-year-old, let alone anybody else, you know, if you got to take a Xanax and drive, it's okay. That was a better option than trying to find this person counseling where he lived.
And then take another one and drive home.
Exactly.
So eventually the VA on the health side did diagnose him with PTSD.
Yes, at the VA clinic itself, they did the in briefing to the counselor, actually, and they went through all of the, you know, the different tests that you have to do, and actually said, yes, he did have PTSD. Comments were made in his records that he needed regular counseling to maintain his level so that he didn't get worse. But I guess regular was like 3 to 4 weeks, which is what, you know, they never had enough, so that's what it ended up being. And at one point again in November, I physically asked, is there any way he can be, you know, referred out into Crestview? And they said, no, I think it was November of 2015. We don't have that available yet. So when he could go, he would try and go, but it wasn't regular at all because it was just too stressful for him. The last time that we took him in, that I took him in, my husband and I were physically at the appointment with him, was April 14th of 2016. And again, I said, is there no way? And they're like, oh, we now have access to the CHOICE program, so we're going to put in a referral for you. So he spent the next 2 weeks.
That was April 14th, 2016,
That was April
right?
14th of 2016, yes, the month before he died. He spent the next 2 weeks playing phone tag, trying to get an appointment, never catching anybody. So I, you know, physically finally got a hold of somebody, and they said, well, we cannot schedule an appointment because the VA sent two referrals at the same time, one for counseling and one for med management, and we can't do two referrals at the same time. So I went into the VA. They allowed me to act on his behalf almost as like a conservator to help facilitate appointments and treatments and things. And I told the person who scheduled the mental health appointments, he immediately called up to Choice and said, whoa, that's how I'm doing it for everybody. That's how I've been directed by our center director. And the person told him, oh, well, it's not really a problem right now because we got a hold of somebody at your VA center, and they said to process the med management and wait on the counseling. Drew had no problems coming in once every 3 months if that's what it took to get his meds. He wanted counseling. He said, I'll go twice a week, three times a week, whatever they feel is needed, if I can just have it at home. So now he said, you know, the person who scheduled appointments said, look, my best advice to you is get an appointment with the med management side of it. Just get into the system, and then we'll resend through the counseling.
Rebecca, while you were all going through this on the health side, Drew had filed a couple of claims for PTSD on the compensation side, the
yes.
benefit, and he was denied.
Exactly.
So we have the military who diagnosed him with PTSD while he was in service. We have the VA health side saying that he's got PTSD, and obviously it was pretty severe at this point by November of 2015. And during this time, the compensation side is saying, too bad, you don't have PTSD. We're not going to grant you an award or a rating or some sort of compensation.
Exactly. The first one was that there was no diagnosis code. He didn't meet the requirements for DSM-5. Well, his stuff through the Air Force and initially through the VA Center had all been applied using DSM-4 criteria. So I set up an e-benefits account for him, uploaded his mental health records, highlighted the diagnosis code, that diagnosis code, 3.18 point something, that said PTSD chronic. So that was his first CMP that they denied it for that. Then they did a second CMP that I believe was in May, June timeframe of 2015. That time, they came back and said, well, he doesn't meet the criteria for service-connected PTSD because his PTSD is being caused by alcohol withdrawal and cannabis use and or recent cannabis stopping. Well, ironically enough, when he was diagnosed in the Air Force, he wasn't smoking cannabis, and he had checked himself in under ADAPT because he was drinking excessively. So the things they said caused it here were actually not happening when the Air Force diagnosed him. So, again, they denied him, which after the first denial in June of 2014, he started experiencing seizure activity. Seizure activity, long periods, like hours worth of seizures, to the point we spent hours in ERs. The first ER, he had seizures for over an hour, and he would come out of them disoriented, scared to death, his eyes wide, and he finally, he didn't know where he was, where am I, what happened, who are you, to the nurses and people he didn't know. And then one occasion in the Crestview ER, he looked at me and said, Mom, I'm broken. Why can't they fix me? And then subsequently the next year, he had the seizure activities again, which seemed to come on when he wasn't able to sleep and having the night terrors again. So we went to the Fort Walton Beach ER, and they actually admitted him into the hospital for a couple of days. And one of the doctors referenced that the seizures were not epileptic in nature, and it could possibly be PTSD that had not adequately been treated. So the third round of seizures that he had to go into the ER, I had taken him into the VA clinic to take some paperwork and for him to be able to articulate to the liaison person there that I was able to act on his behalf. They decided to walk him across to see a doctor. Now, mind you, he walked into the VA center using a mop or broom handle to help him with his balance, which was nearly non-existent, and to help him walk. So they took him out of this office where I stayed with the liaison, started to walk him across the lobby of the VA. He started having a seizure. Mind you, they didn't get a wheelchair that was in the front doorway. He fell to the floor, hit his head. I walked out seeing it, told them to get away from him because I knew what was going to happen. And I told him, I said, he's going to come out of his seizure. He's going to ask who you are. He wants to know who you are. Please tell him your name and who you are. Sure enough, he came out. Mom, where am I? What happened? And then he looked at me and he said, it happened again, didn't it, Mom? And I said, yes, true, but it's okay. You're in the VA. They put him in an ambulance and took him to the Fort Walton Beach ER again. And, of course, they would give him different things to try and help with the seizures and stuff.
When you say different things, you're talking about medication.
Exactly. It was more meds to try and, you know, help with seizure activities, which they weren't epileptic in nature, so they helped slightly. All the while, still, he didn't have a VA compensatable PTSD condition.
And then, Rebecca, on May 30th, 2016 of last year, Drew died by suicide from PTSD, and we've talked about that prior to tonight. What I find interesting, and I want to, you corrected me on something earlier this evening when I used the phrase committed suicide, and you had said that you and the foundation have decided or prefer to use the phrase died by suicide from PTSD. Can you enlighten me on that a little bit? Because I think that was very interesting.
Yes, when we started, I think we did a newspaper interview about 3 or 4 days after Drew died. We used the same language because that's what you always hear is, oh, somebody committed suicide. Well, laws in the past had been, if an individual attempted suicide and was not successful, they had actually committed a crime because they had tried to almost perpetrate self-death. So we went to a TAPS, which is Transition Assistance Program for Survivors, in September of the year he died for a seminar on suicide survivors. And that's one of the things they said, is your loved one did not commit a crime. They died from an ailment that they had that they no longer could fight. They said, would you say that somebody's loved one committed cancer or committed an aneurysm? No. Their loved one died from or by something just like your loved one did. So we started saying, and we had it put in his obituary. We put in his obituary that he died from PTSD suicide. He died by suicide because he had a condition that put him in a place where he could no longer fight. His last text to me was, Mom, I fight the demons in my head every day, and they are winning. So PTSD, in my opinion, caused and killed my son.
You know, Rebecca, one of the things that Dave and I have found over the years when we deal with other veterans with PTSD, while the veteran is suffering from PTSD, the family suffers as well. And I'm sure just listening to you tonight, that's true for you and Rick. That, you know, not only was Drew, but you and Rick were also, and the whole family, I guess the siblings as well.
Yes, it is extremely difficult because you do run through the gamut of why, which is a question that will never be answered because your loved one took the answer with them. Could there have been more that I could have, should have, absolutely would have done? Which in a lot of cases is no. My sister-in-law said it best at Drew's service that had hundreds of people there, that if love could have saved Drew, he would have been immortal. He would have never died. So families that have loved ones that go through and are experiencing PTSD or PTS, however people want to call it, are working at a disadvantage. One, they know something's not right with their loved one. They know the person that they're now living and interacting with is not the same person from before. But the problem comes in is military and veterans, I say active duty and veterans because we lose them on both sides of the wall, do not want to share this with their loved ones. The guilt, the fear, the panic, the anxiety that they suffer in silence with every single day is a burden they don't want to place on their loved ones, because they feel it's theirs to carry alone, because they chose to be in the military. It was their job to deploy. It's their demons that they suffer, and they don't want to share that with a wife or a sibling or a child, whether teenager or young adult, because they don't want their loved ones to carry that burden, that weight that they do. So they suffer in silence, and you will read over and over again the term demons. I fight demons, not just Drew. Multiple posts about, I just couldn't get the demons to stop.
Well, Rebecca, I've really enjoyed listening to you tonight and your story about Drew, and truly it's a tragedy. But it, unfortunately, it's happening 22 times a day. And I know you have this, your foundation. Can you briefly just tell us a little bit about the Winkler Wish Foundation and maybe how some of our listeners can help out or participate?
Absolutely. The Winkler's Wish Foundation came about, actually, a page was set up, Winkler's Wish. Originally, it was Winkler's Wish 22-0, which would have been Drew's Wish to 0. So we started the foundation because we made a promise. I did, and I know the rest of the family did, as I stood in front of Drew's casket, and I promised him that I would help his us. When he posted his last Facebook post, one of 22 per day, why can't they just help us goodbye? Not, why didn't they help me? Why can't they just help us? So we quickly found out that there were no type of support groups or services for veterans in Crestview, which is where we live. There are some that take place in surrounding areas. But the problem is, if a veteran and a veteran suffering from PTSD's family is not aware that these things are available, they may as well not be. Because a veteran that's suffering from PTSD many times is overwhelmed by the details. So for them to go out and search and find resources and support, it's not in their wheelhouse at that time. They're trying to fight to stay whole and to somehow have a semblance of the quality of life that we as a country and the VA promises them when they get back, that they will and we will help them recover. And that promise is not being kept. Every single day it's not being kept. So we said, okay, we don't know how much we can do, but we want to be there to, for the things that are outside of the Winkler's Wish Foundation scope, we will interact and connect them with other resources and foundations that we have found and trust that can offer them those things. That is an intermediary, so you speak, or one person said, oh, so you're going to be a Craigslist for veterans resources. I said, if that's what they want to think we are, great. And then we also do peer meetings every one Saturday a month. The next one is June 24th in Crestview on Dugan. The informations are on the Winkler's Wish Foundation Facebook page. There's no agenda. The veterans come. We feed them a dinner. Sometimes there may be a topic Rick brings up that he thinks could be helpful. But if they want to play pool, they play pool. If they want to watch TV, they watch TV. If they just want to sit around the table and talk, they do. Because what we have found is what veterans lose when they leave the military is the sense of belonging to something, that sense that they've got somebody that has their back, that they know either has gone through the same thing, is currently going through the same thing, or just understands. So they're not giving that burden to somebody else. They're sharing with people who are likely going through the same thing. And then the last thing that we want to help with is whether it's trying to help with Given Hour, which is whose mission is to try and get veterans and or their family members assistance in the area of mental health care through local people. Unfortunately, we don't believe there's any in this area at the time, but Rick has done the training to help be a volunteer to help with that. Or to try and step in as best we can to offer them some mental health care or access to resources, quite honestly, when the VA has just made it impossible for them to get help. And then we go to outreach things. We go to different organizational events, either as participants or just there to get information to try and help facilitate awareness. Because a lot of people don't understand what PTSD is, and they think, oh, my goodness, a veteran has PTSD, they're damaged.
Rebecca, we're coming close to the end of the show, but our listeners can go on to the your foundation, your Facebook, Winkler Wish Foundation. Our Facebook as well has been promoting your foundation, and they can reach out to you there. I really want to thank you for being on our show and sharing everything that happened to your family and Drew. It is a tragedy. And, again, thank you from all of us here. And take care, and I'll be in touch.
Okay.
And I think my friend and client, the singer-songwriter, Matt Williams, wanted to share a song. So I think we're going to go leave the show with a song from Matt Williams, Carry On. I hope everybody enjoys the song.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Volunteered to risk his life, to wear that flag with honor, stand up for us and fight. He wasn't just an ordinary man.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.